Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It has been a very violent week in the DMV and across the nation. Black communities have been hit particularly hard by deadly gun violence. Arrests have been made in deadly mass shootings in Salisbury, Maryland, Baltimore, and Philadelphia. In D.C., the political wrangling over the mayor's crime bill continues ahead of a critical D.C. council vote on Tuesday. And members of our community continue to rack their brains about solutions to fix this violent conundrum. Well, tonight, we're trying to have an honest conversation about gun violence in the Black community. Dear Black people, why are we killing each other? My guest is Ronald Moten, D.C. community activist. I also want to hear from our listeners tonight. We are opening the lines to get your thoughts on why this is happening and what the possible solutions are. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Of course, we're going to be taking calls all the way up until 8 o'clock tonight, so please join this conversation. Ron, thanks so much for coming in. I really appreciate
seeing me. Thanks for having me.
What's wrong with us?
Well, there are several things. We know that we have social, economic issues. We know that the traumas that we've been through at 400 years have affected us. And the nuclear family is broken, so we have no communities. But also, we have systems in place that are broken. And these systems contribute to all those things I just talked about and add steroids to them. So therefore, we're having situations that we've never seen before. Like, I give you an example. You remember the crack epidemic in
Absolutely.
Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And you remember when we were the murder capital, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even during
Dodge City.
Yeah. But even during that time, if you were not in the streets or associated with anybody in the streets, you really didn't have to worry about it coming to your doorstep. Mm-hmm. But now we live in a time where you don't have to be in the streets to get killed. All you have to do is step outside your door. Better yet, just look by a window. And you might get killed. Drive down the street, a friend, Pee-wee, that I know, he just got killed in a, you know, somebody shot him while he was in his car over in Northeast. We had the same thing happen to a Metropolitan Police officer a few years ago. Her daughter, one day from going to college, driving in a car by Saratoga.
Yeah.
She was shot. So
mm-hmm.
this stuff, and it's happening to tourists. It's happening to everybody. And then there's no accountability. Whenever you have a lawless society where you think that, I mean, I was at a hearing the other day and people saying a child shouldn't spend one day in prison, not one day. After you put a gun in my head, not even a day, so I can do an assessment to see why you put the gun in my head, to see should I put you in society or should I find out how we fix you, a broken person, inside of an institution that's really like a playground, right? There's not bars here in D.C. Like, we have a different situation, so I want people to understand that. So when you put all this together, you deal with other issues like, some schools east of the river, you have a 40% rate of children who are not going to school some days, in middle school, right? And we've seen a lot of young people from ages of 10 to 15 getting in a lot of trouble now. So there are a lot of things. But to me right now, the main issue is accountability and ensuring that people get equity in Washington, D.C. So both of those things had to be dealt with.
I think one of the things that has been really, really disturbing for a lot of us in the Black community is that we are seeing teenage Black boys,
yes,
who seem to have no moral compass, no thought about killing another Black person. The carjackings are out of control. We've heard, for example, out in Prince George's County several weeks ago, the county executive, Angela Alsobrooks, quite candidly say that even when she goes to, put gas in her car, that she is afraid. She is a high-ranking elected official who has, police bodyguards with her. But we know that no one is immune. This situation in Baltimore, there was a 17-year-old who was arrested. Now, he has not been charged with the actual shooting of those 30 people and the killing of two. But there has been video that is circulating on social media. The Baltimore City Acting Police Commissioner has seen the video. He said that he is a suspect in the shooting. He was seen on that video with an assault rifle. And I guess I'm trying to wrap my head around what is going through the minds of these children.
So it's a combination of things. One, we got to look at the things our youngins are exposed to, social media. Right now, the coolest guy on the block is the guy with the biggest gun. Right. And when you get clout, you know, children used to seek love. Now they seek likes on social media. Mm. So we don't give children the positive platforms to get attention the right way. Then you have these things. That's one of the things. But let's go back to the beginning of criminal justice reform in Washington, D.C. and throughout America. I remember when in D.C. from 2008 to 2012, from a collective effort, we helped get the murder rate and violence down for four straight years. And then we ran away from all the work that was being done with organizations like Peaceaholics and all the different VIP operations that we did with people, not who just dealt with the children, but dealt with the families, right? And what they started doing was, once we got the criminal justice reform going, they do what they always do. They stop listening to the people in the community. And they start throwing young people in the streets who we told them weren't ready. Young people who we knew people were trying to kill. Young people who we knew were killing people. Young people who we knew we can change if you just keep them still and give them a time out like I was given when I was a young man and had a chance to go to prison, get my GED, go to college, and then come home and be with an organization like Ceasefire Don't Smoke, the brothers and sisters, and was taught how to use all of my skills in the right way to uplift humanity. And we have to, like, stop this. Because you have people who are being held heroes who are going around the country saying they got the numbers down in youth facilities, which they should have gone down, right? But in D.C., we only have 88 bids for violent offenders, right? And they not even full. And I'm not saying that we need to go back to mass incarceration because I don't want to say that. But if we don't correct this, people will lose empathy and we will go back to the same strategies that we had when we did mass incarceration and sent all our brothers and sisters to prison, which is a prime reason why we have some of this violence. So we have to address these things. And then the other thing is when people go to prison, when they go to the facilities, right, we have to make sure they're getting the services that they need to come out and be productive citizens. And what I want us to prevent, the 22-year-old man that we saw who went out there and killed a father of five, the bus driver, transit authority employee, mm-hmm. and then came and killed the dog and did all this other stuff.
Yeah.
He was in the criminal justice system as a juvenile, right? And we don't want to see another young man like that who they didn't do what they were supposed to do with, because now his whole life is thrown away and several other people are dead and traumatized for the rest of their lives. So you can't say you don't want to traumatize the child by locking them up, but then saying it's okay to terrorize an entire community. We just need balance. And right now in our country, I just feel like we go from one extreme, which was mass incarceration, to another extreme where we say, just let them run wild. You know, it's just like, it's no order.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810 tonight. It's Dear Black People, Why Are We Killing Each Other? Why is there so much gun violence in our community? If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Let me go to Dia calling from Columbia. Dia, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to chime in because I'm also very saddened by the way which our community is really taking each other out. And I think, unfortunately, what we're not really looking at, because as a culture, we're sort of, you know, we shy away from any sort of mental health, right? But you have to look at some of these young teenagers. Their parents are young. their parents were teenagers when they were having these kids. So there's no real parental skills. And I agree with the gentleman that social media isn't helping at all. But then there's also the parents who have to be more accountable. We always want to say we need programs, we need services. We need parents to be more accountable. We need parents, when they come home from work at night, to not go to their room and get on the TV as long as they think they know where their kids are. Spend time with their kids. Do things with their kids. If you see your kid going down the wrong path, that's when you have to take that extra time to spend with them and keep them on the right course. And I don't think a lot of that is happening because it's just easier to put them in front of a TV or whatever social media is out there now.
Dia, I would agree with you to a point. And mental health is real, as we've seen in this case in Philadelphia with that mass shooting, that the suspect has already been determined by authorities to have severe mental health issues. Don't know the details about that, but that is the reporting. But I would also venture to say that not everyone out here who is doing all of this killing has a mental health issue as we understand it. I think that some people, and Ron, you can tell me if I'm off base here, but some people are robbing with the outcome sometimes, as we've seen in carjackings, with the death of a victim, because the end result is money.
It's money, and sometimes it's just clout, and sometimes it's what they call a free ride.
What is defined free ride?
The young people, they don't call it a UUV anymore. They call it free ride. So they're getting a free ride. They get one car on this side of town just to go on that side of town sometimes.
Absolutely.
And the thing is, like, what is the value of a life now? And we have to teach young people that life has a value. And when it gets to the point where the OGs on the streets don't want to deal with the youngest because they don't want to go to jail, right, or end up being a victim because they know how it is, and almost every young person got a gun, right? And the machine guns and everything else they have is like, you know, it's unreal. And I want to say this. We got to stop it. We got to slow them down. I talked to a lot of guys who went under the IRA Act, which was a bill passed by Kenya McDuffie to give young people who 20, 30 years ago did senseless crimes, and we knew they had issues. And if they went to prison and did what's right, 20, 30 years later, they were given a chance to come back home.
Mm-hmm.
93% of these guys are doing what's right in the community, which is a huge success, right? Unbelievable. But the problem is we don't want young people to be in that situation. We want to stop them from having to get the IRA Act.
Yeah, you want to stop them before they get
and
there.
And that's the thing. Yeah. We're not stopping them. And this thing has gone from, like, what, 2000... I want to say in 11 to now, it's been getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse, right? And it's been escalating, but our elected officials and the people who've been pushing these narratives from outside of D.C. have been denying it. But we, the people, been seeing it and talking about it, and we have been neglected and haven't been heard. So I hope our city council hears us on Tuesday.
Yeah,
and they do the right things for the right reasons so we can get the right results. And this solve one piece of the puzzle. We know we have a lot of other things we have to deal with regarding to violence. But this right here, you cannot let people think that there are no consequences for violent crimes.
Dia, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. It's Dear Black People, Why Are We Killing Each Other? I want to hear from you tonight. Gregory calling from Maryland. Gregory, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. From my Christian perspective, I originally saw three things that contributed to violence so much: pride, revenge, and the love of money. Then I'd like to add a fourth thing: selfishness. People are have proud ways. And then when someone does them wrong, they have to get revenge. This is a cycle of revenge that just goes back and forth. And the buck has to stop with Christians. And I hold the church and the government most accountable. But as Christians, the buck has to stop with us. We have to know that pride has no place in the world, in God's kingdom. Instead, we need to be humble. We need to be, instead of revenge, we need to give place to wrath and vengeance. Let people know that vengeance belongs to God. He will repay. We need to love our neighbors as ourselves, and also we need to love Jesus instead of loving money.
Hold on, Gregory. Let me stop you here, because as a Christian, I agree. I haven't heard anyone talk about, you know, faith as an issue. I seriously doubt, Ron, tell me if I'm wrong, these young people are not thinking about issues of faith.
A lot of these young people don't even believe in God.
They have not been introduced to that. And so, yes, Gregory, I hear you, but I would say that a lot of these young people have not heard. And as a result, I think that the choir that you are preaching to are not the problem. But thank you so much for your insight. 202-319-7810. Tonight, we're asking, dear black people, why are we killing each other? We're taking phone calls all the way up until 8 o'clock tonight. Adrian calling from D.C., we're going to talk to you next. Eugene calling from White Marsh, we're going to talk to you as well. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise I will get to your phone call. I'm Harold Fisher. The Quiet Storm with John Mons is coming up next. That's on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2 in just a few seconds. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're asking, dear black people, why are we killing each other? We are examining the deadly gun violence in our community. My guest is D.C. community activist Ronald Moten, and you, the listener. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Eugene calling from White Marsh. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Eugene, are you there? Give me a call back if you can. Let me go to Adrian. Adrian calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, this is a multifaceted issue. Yep. Shout out to Ron Fulton. I'm Adrian. I moved to Ghana about 3 years ago because I just got fed up. And it's only an issue in America. Black people killing each other is something that is unique to the American experience, and the value of our lives has never been what it should be. And we're seeing this reflected in our own people now. But why are we killing each other? Because we see that everyone else can kill us. Everyone else has always been able to do whatever they want with the black person and get away, or, you know, somehow the law only applies to us. And now you have this ruthless generation, you know, with I won't say limited opportunity. I would say limited interest in opportunities. And if we don't capture the young people before they go wild and are out of control, this is what we have. There is no really catching them once they become I take that back. We do better at catching them at a younger age than we do at trying to turn around already a habit in a messed up brain that needs rehabilitation. So I think that as the population, as the professionals, those that know better, those that know what we need, we have to reach out into the school systems. I went to go talk to Cardoza when I first got back from Ghana just to talk about my experience. And I'm talking about Africa, but the black boys aren't in the schools.
Yeah.
So in all the classes I'm there, I said, where are the brothers? Where are the boys? This is Cardoza. They said, oh, they don't come to class.
Yeah.
I said, what do you mean? Well, there's about 10 of them in each class that are missing. See, I just allow these kids not to come to class.
Yeah. Thank you, Adrian. I got a lot of calls, but you make an excellent point, which brings me to the next thing. There's a one of the local reporters on television has done 2 days at the Jacob's Ladder program in Prince George's County, asking teenage boys who have been in the criminal justice system why they were you know, committing violent acts. And it was fascinating where some of the answers were, they felt that being in school was like jail. They also felt that they didn't like anyone telling them what to do. They were bucking against authority. Okay, I didn't like being in school. I didn't like anyone telling me what to do. When I was a kid, but I did it because my daddy told me so.
And you bring a valid point. In many of these impoverished areas in cities like D.C., like over 90% of the 15 to 17-year-olds live in households where there's no black man. Mm-hmm. And you have boys that are being raised by women, and they do a great job. But a woman can't be a man. And the role of a man is needed, especially now in America. So when you start talking about the authoritarian and the accountability that the man normally emphasizes with a child, whether they're a boy or girl, that's missing. So then when authority and structure comes, they don't know how to deal with it. You know, so we have a serious problem. And then with over the last few decades, the nuclear family breaking up, you used to have an uncle, a grandfather, a neighbor who would step in when the father wasn't there. And now that that's gone, we're really seeing the impact of not having male roles, even in the schools.
Yeah.
Do you think more students would go to school if they had more male teachers? There are not any male teachers, very few, right? Who can relate to the children? So the culture competence is gone. Then the other thing I would say that we talk about social media, we had multiple thing platforms for young people. This thing about to go back 20 years and look at all the terrible schools we had in D.C. But in every single one of those schools, there was an after-school program going on to engage our children. There were police in the schools with the boys' clubs engaging our children. There were things for young people to do to get attention, doing the right things. You know, and all those things disappeared. We had one shooting at Ballou Senior High School, and then all that stuff just, pew, it left. You know, then many of the schools that were being used as boys' clubs were sold to charter schools, mm-hmm. especially in Ward 8. So and then we had the public housing thing where young people moved from public houses, from one public housing to another public housing, right, where people who they had beefs with. People don't have neighborhood schools. They start walking and had to transfer throughout the city to go to school. And this was a problem not just in D.C., but throughout the country. So a lot of policies that take place, there's a direct correlation to these policies and the crime we see and the broken family where we enhance people not to move forward in life but to stay stable and get nothing but a crumb.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Melissa, calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling, Melissa. What's on your mind? Melissa, are you there? Give me a call back if you can. Let me go to Elder Suggs, calling from D.C. Elder, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm calling because I believe that the killing in D.C. is going on because, number one, our young people, they don't know who they are. And you can't, if you don't know who you are, how are you going to love yourself if you don't know who you are?
So, explain that. Let break quickly, because I've got a lot of calls. That down
because
for.
They don't know who they are because firmly, universal law says that you are created in the likeness and the image of God. Number one, I had to learn that. And then also it says, universal law says, still no more. Work with your hands. Universal law also says, you don't work, you don't eat.
That's right.
But these young people, they don't understand that because, and it's back to what somebody said earlier, it is a faith community issue, partially. Because God said that if my people who are called by my name would humble themselves, turn from their evil way, seek his face and pray, he would heal the land. It's not just a D.C. issue.
No, and certainly, as I said, Elder, in the beginning of this program, this is a black community issue. And yes, I agree with what you're saying about the faith issue. Why? Because I was an acolyte at, you know, Hughes United Methodist Memorial Church over here off of East Capitol Street when I was in Sunday school. But the point is that these children are not.
And yes, and so I'm not worried about the folks whose parents take them to Sunday school. I'm not worried about the folks that go to St. Teresa or Hughes or to our First Baptist of Glen Arden. I'm not worried about those folks. Those are folks are getting, I'm talking about the ones who aren't getting the message, who, yeah, the work that these children are doing is violence, it's deadly. That's, in some cases, that's how they eat.
Right, and it's not going to stop until the whole community, because we're saying it's not just a black community issue.
But we're talking about black folks, Elder. We're not talking. I'm not talking about anybody else's community today. I'm not talking about anybody else's community. I know it happens in their community. I'm not talking about the police, because the police are easy targets.
That's another conversation, though.
Yeah, I realize that. And that's a whole different show.
Because some police, not even policing anymore.
Right.
I mean, you go into a grocery
Elder,
store.
Elder, thank you so much. Go right ahead.
You go into a grocery store. I go in the grocery store, and I see people walking with trash bags and still, and they know that God can't touch them. You see what I'm saying? So we have created a atmosphere where people know there's no accountability. And wherever there's no accountability, you live in organized chaos. So we have organized chaos right now.
So let me ask you this. Talk about the being desensitized to the violence. I remember, and you're old enough to remember, a lot of the pushback on hip-hop and music with violent, lyrics. Let's be really clear. Today's hip-hop is not our hip-hop, okay? That talked about issues in the community, whether it's police violence, whether it was poverty or all kinds of, you can talk about NWA or KRS-One or anybody else, but the hip-hop that we have now, there is, particularly a lot of that underground stuff is violent.
Well, let's be clear. Hip-hop has served our community in such a positive way.
Right, that's right? What I'm
and
saying.
It was, when it was created, it was doing so many great things. But throughout history, anything that we do well that uplifts and drives our people to organize, to address our issues, it seems like there's always an attack on, and then people get inside of it, infiltrate it, and then use it as a way to destroy us. And that's what happened with hip-hop. But this drill music and trap music, and I love NDRE because the stuff she was talking about was right on point, right? Nobody wants to talk about it, but it's real. So people have been desensitized to think that, okay, perk, opioids. That's cool. It was never cool to use drugs like that when we grew up.
Right.
But it's cool now. Designer drugs are cool, right? So the music has basically desensitized our young people. The video games have desensitized our young people. I wrote about this in my book back in 2006 when I did the update in the Washington Post talking about how Grand Theft Auto and these games and music, the whole world is going to pay a price within 10 years. 10 years later, we paying the price, brother, because these are the same games that our military uses to train people to fight wars. And our children, in some cases, are playing it 10, 12 hours a day, right? And then you don't have a family that gives you some balance, no structure. And then you go in the neighborhood with people who are doing all type of things who don't have no structure. And then you have idle time on your hands, or you're not going to school, right? Or you got peer pressure and you're trying to fit in. And this is what we get.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Nikki calling from Suitland. Thanks for calling, Nikki. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yes, thank you for taking my call. I think everybody had a piece of the puzzle. It's going to take a concerted effort for everybody, all hands on deck, to solve this problem with our youth, because what's going on with them is a symptom of the sickness and of whatever they're dealing with. It's a bunch of stress. Kids are mentally, warped. They have no identity. They have an identity crisis. The schools are not teaching the history to give them a sense of pride or self. The homes need to be, you know, supported. Families need to be supported. It's just that pandemic has brought it all out. And I just feel like everybody that called in and said, you know, this is one of the issues that is that needs to be addressed, the spiritual side of it. I just think it's just we're going to have to act like the elephants in the well. When the community is under attack, they circle around the youth to protect them.
Yeah, yeah. Nikki, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Betier?
Batia.
I apologize. Thank you so much. What's on your mind?
Well, first I want to say that I appreciate you having this topic spoken out loud because it's definitely needed. And then I want to continue by saying that I think a big problem has been an intergenerational gap of communication between adults and their children. And on top of no fathers already being in the home, I believe that something in the past called the key latch generation, that disconnection between parents and how they're raising their kids on a day-to-day basis really changed generationally. And it definitely caused, I feel like, a disconnect in that dynamic, which definitely leaves the home as far as how the kids are acting outside, because they're acting how they are raised. And I think the kids have no programs, no guidance, and no real skills to be productive enough to not just hang outside. And they don't have the guidance to lead them to these things, these programs, or other things to do because no one's guiding them. The adults are working. Everyone's busy or social media. So, yeah. I think the individualistic mindset of survival has kind of taken over our community, and we really need to just stop for a moment and figure out some real solution.
Yeah. Batia, I apologize for butchering your name. Thank you so much for your input. Before I go back to the phone lines, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, Ron, because we've already identified the problem. We know right now there's a lot of lawlessness in the society, particularly around young people. And it's not, you know, just the minors. We've got some new adults.
Right.
Some over 21-year-olds.
Who act like children.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I wanted to, you know, on this program years ago, we used to get a lot of this holistic strategies for embracing, you know, these young people and looking at, you know, how to better address this thing. You touched on it about, you know, mass incarceration and, you know, and everything else. You even remember. I'm telling our age, your age and mine. You remember when, you know, when the Fruit of Islam from the Nation of Islam, they were patrolling, you know, Mayfair Mansions, and, you know, and the like, and other communities. And it wasn't just here. They were doing it in Baltimore. They were doing it in our communities in New York, and they were doing it in the Midwest.
Right.
But now. The feeling is that a lot of law-abiding black folks are fed up. They are afraid of the carjackings. They are afraid of the gun violence. And so I put this to you because you remember, you know, they talked about, you know, let's patrol our own communities. But when grandma tells these three, you know, ruffians who are leaning on her car in our community, you know, baby, please don't lean on my car. And they turn around, they cuss grandma out, lift up their shirts and show, you know, their handguns. What are we supposed to do about that?
Well, like I said, some of them need to go to jail. But I would say that they weren't born that way. So we have to start with these young people at a young age and prevent this from happening. It's called prevention. Don't wait till they turn into a monster. Let's have some love and some order early on. Because they've taken so many things away from us that worked with our ancestors. Like, you can't spank your child. You know what I'm saying? Everything that they tell, you can't spank your child. Child carjack you. They can't go get locked up for a day. Not even a day. right? You smack you smack your teacher under Title 25. You can't be suspended. So basically, we're training children that
nothing is going to happen to
right?
them.
So over a decade or so of that mentality being taught to children, you create a different type of child. That's facts, right? So they have adopted to the new law, right? Which is there's no law, right? And then the community has evaporated for various reasons. Many of them not our fault. Most of them not our fault. But at some point, we just got to, like you were saying, have some brothers and sisters come together and say, we're not going to accept this. Not in my backyard. And love the children and hold them accountable.
Is it time to go back to three strikes, though?
No. No. So my thing is, you entering some very, very dangerous territory mm-hmm. when you start talking about that. Now, if you're talking about three strikes for violent crime.
Yes.
And then we sit you down for a while.
Yes.
Because some people have been so traumatized. I don't think it's no cookie cutter solution. But I think when you lock people up for a short amount of time, or if it's a very violent crime, like some of the guys who have the IRA Act, and you're giving them a chance to redeem themselves. Because everybody in the Bible, pretty much the God used, went through something. Some of them were murderers and everything, and they came back and did great things in their community. So
But here's my question. If you kill somebody, you are a 15-year-old and you pull out a gun, you try to carjack somebody, that driver says no. You shoot and kill that person. If they'll lock you up, for what, 3 years until you turn 18?
So let me stop you right there.
Tell me what.
There are young people in D.C.'s criminal justice system who have multiple homicides and never did more than 6 months. You say 3 years.
Right.
6 months, right? So, no, a person shouldn't kill somebody and do 6 months. There has to be some consequences and some therapy. And if somebody normally does it, they've been through a lot. They've been traumatized. Like some of these young people in some of these schools, right? It's one school where they had four people killed in 1 year. I guarantee you a small percentage of those people had mental health service. You go on the other side of town, somebody dies in a car accident, the whole school gets services, right? It's part of the culture to make sure their children get services. So we know that has a direct correlation on what we see, right? But it still doesn't justify. This gives us understanding, mm-hmm. right? So we still have to deal with it. And that's why I say, based upon circumstances, everybody doesn't fit in the same circumstance. And you have to do that case by case. But you shouldn't be able to kill somebody and then know that you're going to be home 3, 4, 5 years. Okay. I just don't think that it should be like that. I think that you have to pay a price, and we have to make sure that we heal people. Because as long as we keep on having hurt people and they're not being healed, because hurt people, then we'll see more of this. So that's why I say it's a complicated thing, but there are different things that we can do. I mean, what this brother was talking about teaching people, we did Baloo in-school suspension. And you know we did the in-school suspension? The Rockman Branch, the principal, let us do a civil rights class.
Mm.
And we taught the young people about their history and why and how people died for them to have the opportunity to get the education they were getting. And then they started looking at it a different way. We took children on civil rights tours to Alabama, Mississippi, and Atlanta, and they met the civil rights leaders who were still alive at that time and worked with King. Some of those children would come back and squash beefs together. So what I'm saying, all these things are factors, but you have to have certain things in place. Because I'll give you another example. Child in the court system, right?
Mm-hmm.
When Peace of Harlem was doing the work, the court system would give the child an ultimatum to go to our program or go to jail.
Oh, okay.
So there was some incentive for them to get the help. And then if they're around us long enough, we're going to get them. We're going to eventually get to them because they need some consistency of getting positive food in their brain versus the negative, right? So that's another issue. Now the children don't have to go to the programs, but we put millions on top of millions of dollars in these programs in the community. And a lot of times the children feel like they're getting in trouble, don't feel like they have to go.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines. Got a lot of calls here. Larry, calling from Upper Marlboro. Thanks for hanging on, Larry. What's on your mind?
Well, I just want to make a comment. I raised 7 kids, 4 stepchildren and 3 natural children. One of my sons brought a gun home. How about he found it? I called the police on him. They took him and the gun. I didn't want nobody crying over a body that I let my son keep a gun for instead of him doing the right thing with it. They kept him for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not kidding around. I had to go out into the streets and get my children. You know, you as an individual, as a parent, we can make that difference with nieces, nephews, or whoever. I'm talking to 3 nephews in Detroit and 2 nephews here in Maryland to put them on the right path. And you as the individual, if you go to work every day, you can be the example of what they need to see. Day in, day out, not drug dealers, not hustlers or anything else, but they need to know that you're there for them. And they need to know when they see you, you represent positive image, you represent working, you represent loving the community and church and God.
So, Larry, let me ask you real quick, and this is important, quickly, what did your son say when he came home after spending 3 hours with the police? What
one of his little friends that went to college.
Hold on. How old was he when this happened?
Okay. He was like 17.
He was 17. Okay. So go ahead. So what did he say when he was, you know, after he spent time with police and he came home?
He said they questioned him about where he got it from, who he was with, and different things like that. And that one of his friends that got shot who went to college. I gave him the option, stay home and go to college. And he went to college, and one of his little friends got shot. I said, tell them about that as well. One of his friends, it was mistaken identity, they got shot as well. But the thing was, they questioned him and grilled him about where he got the gun from to make sure that he, quote-unquote, found it.
So, and I guess what I'm asking is, but what did he say to, what did he learn from this?
Well, that I'm, because when he talked about joining this gang where he probably got the gun from, this guy was trying to act like he's my father, and I told him, I am your father, not some boy telling you to come to some gang meeting.
Mm.
That was the thing, because I told him, you know, I had 2 sons that got shot in the same year. Same thing. Wanted to be in gangs, but not in my house. No way.
And what he's saying is so important. I had one of my children went to Ballou Senior High School, and I remember he was being disrespectful in the school, right? I walked him through the school and showed him what disrespectful looks like. Never had that problem again. Yeah. Then I had same son. I told him don't go down Gallery Place. This one, Gallery Place, was I had all that those issues going on with the children. Went down and got locked up for a bag of weed. So I said, can you pass a urine test? He said it wasn't his. It was on the ground. The police gave him a shot. I said, okay, can you pass a urine test? I don't know, right? So, stole my car. So, he got a beat down, right? And the courts told me that basically he can disrespect me and talk to me how he wanted to. I told him, no, y'all keep him. He not coming to my house. They tried, Sasha Bruce tried to drop him off. I said, he's not coming to my house. He went to a halfway house for 5 days. I brought his clothes, his 5-pair outfits. He couldn't have his headphones, none of that. After 5 days in the halfway house, I never had a problem out of my son again. Yeah. I think a lot of times the parents let these children disrespect them. No court, no law, nobody's going to allow me to let my son disrespect me or anybody in society. And I think that's one of the problems. Parents have started giving into this system where we give children more power than the parents.
Yeah. It looks like, you know, in Larry's case, it wasn't tough love. It was rough love. Yeah. And I think that, and I agree, we've had these discussions here on this program as well about, you know, corporal punishment and not spanking the kids. I do not agree with that. I was spanked, didn't like it. I turned out okay.
It's the difference between spanking and abuse.
That's true. And that could be yet another one. And I think for those parents who have great kids who they have not spanked, you know, more power to them because they have those skills that have allowed them to manage their children from day one.
Or the issues that their children were facing were not as serious what the outcome could be for the things they were doing when they weren't listening to our children. Normally, if they don't listen to us, the outcomes can be much differently. Yeah. So your situation is more serious than somebody who lives in Beverly Hills or somebody who lives up Crestwood or something like that. So that's another issue, you know?
Larry, thank you so much for your phone call. Good luck to you. I appreciate you. 202-319-7810. Let me slide one more phone call in here. Margaret calling from Baltimore. Margaret, thanks for calling quickly. What's on your mind? Margaret, what's on your mind? Give me a call back. Let me go to the last call. Javon calling from Springfield. Oh, we lost Javon. Okay. I've got a minute and a half left. I mean, we've talked about a lot of things. We've talked about anything from corporal punishment, from starting from the very beginning, to giving them some sit down time, you know, some time out. How long is it going to take us to fix this once we decide to try and fix this? Is it going to take as long as it did to have it be broken?
Well, it didn't take us overnight to get in this situation. But I can tell you, I've seen in D.C. where people came together, rolled their sleeves up, created a strategy, and after a few years of work, we saw the murder rate decrease for 4 years. And there wasn't no one group. Right, there were people doing different things with the family, with the courts, in the schools, in the institutions, and we have to do that again. Everybody has to get their egos out the way, right?
Yes.
And I would say people have to have some compromise in them. Like one of the problems is we go too far to the right or to the left, and we don't disagree to agree and make diamonds out of the friction that we have. But we got to start having these conversations, come up with plans and action, not just talk. And then we can get the results that we want.
But I also think that parents also need to, as best they can, try to teach their children conflict resolution.
Oh, most definitely.
You know, time to count to 10. And, you know, everybody's, you know, we get into these situations where I don't like you and you don't like me, but nobody asks, well, why don't you like me?
We got to teach children how to play chess. They got to think before they move because there's supposed to be consequences for every decision you make. Some consequences are good when you make good decisions, and when you make bad decisions, it's the direct opposite. That's the real life, right? That's the real life thing right there. We got to make sure people understand life is not a game.
Yeah.
It's real.
And it can be finite if you make the wrong decision.
Yes.
Ron Moten, always good to talk to you, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks
for coming.
And
you be safe this weekend.
Yes, sir.
That is the Daily Drum for this Friday, July 7th. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Millett Green, Bermonte Bryan, producer Candace Atkins-Wilson, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. Good night, and have a safe weekend.